Chapter 22.
I don't know what's happening, Mandalore, but the amount of secure GA-COM traffic flying around the Hapen Cluster now has to be seen to be believed. Major panic ongoing. Stand by.
Goran Devine, surveillance expert, reporting back from the nearby Roche asteroid field prior to launch of the Besuleek. GAG Stealth X, laid up on Zeost. Jason really didn't know where else to go. He stared at the cockpit panel facing him, knowing that he should have been back on Coruscant at least 20 hours ago, and that Neothel would be cursing him roundly. He was alone, increased black fatigues, in agonizing pain, and hungry. This wasn't the ascension of the Lord of the Sith that he'd expected. He wondered what ordinary people thought happened when the course of history swung on a single pivotal act. They probably didn't envisage that their future was now in the hands of a tired, sweaty man who kept thinking he needed a shave and almost unable to believe that he'd killed Mara Jade Skywalker. Killing didn't get any easier. He was just getting better at it. But it still didn't make sense. He rubbed his cheek, and the stubble rasped audibly under his fingers. Mara hadn't been the most precious thing in his life. In recent weeks, she'd changed from being his only friend to just someone else who didn't trust him and was getting in his way. She was his aunt. She was family. When his role in her death became known, it had to be when. But not now. Not any time soon. The shock and hatred would tear apart what was left of the Skywalker and Solo families. Maybe even Neothel, and all the others who understood that securing peace was a dirty business, would be disgusted. "I just killed my aunt. I grew up with her. She was there for me. We fought a war together. I have to face her son. I have to face Ben. What have I done?" His stomach rumbled. How could he possibly be hungry at a time like this? "He will immortalize his love." Stupid knotted tassels. All kinds of ancient Sith prophecies that would come to pass when the new Dark Lord was ready to take up his mantle and usher in a golden age of justice, order, and peace. The key had been turned, and this was what the prophecy was supposed to mean, by Jason killing what he most loved. He'd killed Mara, and Nalani, and Fett's daughter, and chaotic, unjust democracy. And he loved none of those. He'd tried to kill Lumia more than once. She seemed to think that was part of the job description for Sith acolytes. So Jason didn't believe it. And if Mara hadn't been trying to kill him to begin with, he would have seen it even more as a life thrown carelessly away. The fabric of existence didn't seem to have changed enough. That shift should have been cataclysmic, and although he was too much of a pragmatist to think he could raise his fists to the sky and call down lightning to energize a mighty soul, he expected to be able to taste the spiritual and existential transformation. He was afraid. However certain he'd been a few hours ago that Mara was to be the one destined to die, it didn't make sense in the context of the prophecy. He didn't feel different, either. Did that mean he still had to kill someone else? He'd been so certain it would be all over now. The sense of anticlimax was almost enough to make him sob. Then he felt a presence. He leaned his head against the side of the cockpit canopy, and gazing up at him from the nightmarish planet surrounding his fighter, was Lumia. Jason popped the seal.
I'm surprised you could be bothered to come and find me, after what happened.
You now need to be seen.
Lumia had a new serenity about her. As ever, she still seemed to take no offense at him for trying to kill her again.
Your new existence has started, Dark Lord.
Really?
The pain in his shoulder gnawed at him like an animal tearing his flesh.
I don't feel very lordly.
I assure you it's done. I felt it.
She might have been humoring him. He shifted in his seat to ease the assortment of bruises.
I'll be looking for further proof.
Stop arguing with the Force, and pay attention to what you have to do next. Luke Skywalker arrived at Hapes a couple of hours ago, and they're looking for evidence. And Neothel is griping bitterly about your being AWOL.
They won't find me.
That's not what I mean. Your trip to the Royal Court, a subject I will take to my grave, by the way, needs to be smoothed out in terms of credibility. Sooner or later it'll emerge that you were in the Hapes Cluster, and that Mara knew that.
How?
May I alarm you?
Can you alarm me any more? Is it possible?
Mara had a conversation with Hapen Fleet Ops while in Hapen space about your presence on Hapes. I intercepted it, which is one reason why I was able to come to your aid.
Wonderful.
And she even gave them a description of the Sith Sphere as a possible hostel. I think that stacks up to a scenario needing a plausible explanation.
Lumia was right. Jason needed a cover story, if only for Tenel Ka.
This is going to tax even my creativity, Jason said. How widely known is this?
There are no secrets in the galaxy, Jason. Only varying sizes of distribution lists. The Bothans will have it. The Mandalorians will have it. And Alliance Intel will have it. And they don't love you at all these days.
Well, if I weren't a Sith Lord fresh out of the box, I'd be borked.
Don't joke. Never joke about this.
I could say, quite legitimately, that I was visiting Tenel Ka as Chief of State because of the continuing embarrassment about my parents.
And what about your wretched physical state?
Ah, I'm hastening the healing trance as much as I can.
What about Mara's body?
I left it where it was.
She didn't become discorporeal. She left her remains?
I think so. Does that surprise you?
Lumia seemed to consider something, breaking her intense gaze.
I always thought she'd become one with the Force, somehow.
Well, who knows? And here I am about to say they'll never trace the poison back to me. But does it matter? One day soon they'll all have to know.
And by then it'll be too late for them to do anything to you.
Lumia turned as if to walk away, and then seemed to change her mind.
My ship has been noted. Ben didn't see you on Cavan, and I'm almost certainly the prime suspect for Mara's death. This all enables me to do the last service I can for you.
Which is?
Lumia's most unnerving state was when she was being gracious. It told Jason that she knew something he didn't.
To buy you time, to consolidate your hold on the galaxy,
she said.
By making Luke believe it was all my doing.
Don't you think you should be hiding from him?
No. You might say that's my destiny.
That smacks of a death wish.
My work and my life are done, Jason. I'd really welcome a rest.
Death seemed a very routine commodity lately. Jason wasn't comfortable with that. He had a sudden urge to embrace life. Deep in him, for all the boy inside that still expected a lightning bolt to mark his passage into Sith maturity, there was a feeling of optimism, green and fresh. It took him aback.
By the way, Alima is still prowling,
Lumia said.
If you spot her, she'll probably be coveting the Sith ship to pursue her vendetta against your parents. I have no doubt you'll see her around.
Jason wondered if Sith left wills. Lumia certainly seemed to have thought hers through. She studied him with her head on one side for a while, eyes disturbingly green and not unlike Mara's. And then she walked away into the icy fog. He meditated for an hour or so to hasten the healing process, and then set off for Coruscant, via Hapes. Fountain Palace, Hapes.
Luke? Luke?
Luke! Tenel Ka had to repeat his name 3 times before he could manage to lift his head to look at her. The elegant brocade sofa felt as if it were swallowing him whole, and maybe that would have been for the best. There was an insulating gauze of numbness holding Luke together, and it took triple repetition to penetrate it. The first to stop him thinking that he hadn't even said goodbye to Mara and was asleep when she left, the second to stop him racking his brains for the last words he'd said to her, which he couldn't recall, and the third to stop him seeing in his mind's eye her scribbled note that he'd balled up and used to plug a hole in his cockpit console, and that he had now lovingly smoothed flat and would keep with him for the rest of his life.
Gone hunting for a few days. Don't be mad at me, farm boy. Luke, Jaina's here.
Thank you, Tenel Ka. As long as he stayed numb, Luke felt he would function. He would gather his thoughts, see that the rest of the family was coping, and then he'd act, when he knew what to do. I can't thank you enough.
Luke, I have all my guard deployed searching the cluster.
Jaina walked in briskly, face grim and eyes a little swollen. She dropped down on her knees and pressed herself into Luke's lap, cuddling him in silence. He hadn't really needed to call. They'd all felt it. Still no sign of Ben, Luke said, stroking Jaina's hair. And I can't even guess where he is. Jaina knelt back on her heels.
I can't feel him either, Uncle Luke.
He'll be okay, sweetheart. I'd know if... Luke didn't finish the sentence. He knew now exactly how Ben's death would feel to him in the Force. Ben wasn't dead. Luke waited for a call back from Leia and Han. He knew Leia had sensed Mara's passing. After that moment, when he'd felt the lightest of touches on his hair and he turned his head, he'd had the sensation of meeting Leia's eyes. She'd call. He'd keep calling anyway. Tenel Ka's regal composure flickered for a moment.
Jason was here earlier.
What?
Jaina suddenly regained that edge in her voice.
What do you mean, here?
He paid a visit yesterday,
Tenel Ka said.
I don't know where he is now, but...
Would Hapen Fleet Ops have logged his vessel's movements?
Asked Jaina,
Any scrap of information might help.
Jason must have felt the death like anyone else, and there was a good chance he'd actually been here while Mara was pursuing Lumia in this very system. But he was busy on GAG business. Luke seethed in silence.
Tenel Ka nodded, all gracious calm again.
I'll have the captain get all the available information for you.
Tenel Ka strode out. Jaina's expression was murderous.
Don't say it, said Luke.
He's a total stranger,
Jaina said.
There. I had to, or else I'll have an aneurysm trying to stifle the urge to punch him out when he finally bothers to show up.
Luke hugged Jaina, feeling dwarfed by the grand stateroom, and his comlink buzzed. It was Leia.
Hey,
she said. Leia didn't just touch him in the Force. She enveloped him.
We're coming back as fast as we can. I'm so sorry. I am so, so sorry.
It sounded as if Han had wrestled the link from her. Kid, you just hang in there. Don't do a thing. Leave it all to us. Is Ben okay? Missing again. He'll be fine. Don't you worry. We're coming. There wasn't much else Han could say, and he never mentioned Jason. Luke put his comlink back in his pocket. The silence felt like pressure building on his eardrums. His breathing seemed to fill the room. What was the last thing I said to her?
You know pretty well the last thing Mara and I talked about,
Jaina said suddenly. She was doing exactly what he was, replaying final conversations. Tears welled in her eyes.
Nothing important, like how much I loved her and what she'd done for me. Just how much energy I waste in stupid games with Zek and Jag, like a dumb, sulky teenager.
Don't do this to yourself.
Takes this to make me grow up.
Jaina didn't seem able to say the words, Mara's death.
Everything's changed now.
I know. I know.
It's Lumia.
We don't know that.
You're reasonable to the last, aren't you, Uncle Luke?
None of us is thinking straight at the moment. He didn't need Jaina going off on an impulsive quest for vengeance. He had to focus. Somehow. Why don't you call Zek? Jag? He hadn't a clue which of the two men she'd want to turn to now. They need to know, too. Jaina brushed the tip of her nose discreetly with the back of her wrist and seemed to take an unnaturally fixed interest in the ornate carvings on a chair leg nearby.
I'll inform them, but I'm done with all that personal stuff. I'm going to concentrate on one thing, and that's making Lumia pay. If I'm supposed to be the sword of the Jedi, then it's time I took it seriously, and there's nothing that's worth my time more than this.
The duty captain of the guard came in later with a datapad on a bronzium platter and held it out to Luke. When he hesitated, Jaina took it and pored over it. The expression of "I told you so" on her face told Luke that it wasn't going to be comfortable news.
You want the short version, Uncle Luke?
Up to you.
Mara shows up after Jason in 5 Alpha and asks Ops to keep an eye out for an orange spherical ship with cruciform masts, because our new chief of state might be under threat.
Luke always tried not to be swayed by circumstantial evidence, because 2 and 2 frequently proved to add up to anything but 4. But he didn't know if they'd find any other evidence. He didn't know if they'd ever find Mara's body, or even if she'd left mortal remains. He couldn't ignore this. Jaina, he said, I think you have to leave this to me.
What was it you said about none of us thinking straight?
I don't want anyone acting on half the facts.
What's it going to take, then?
She was my wife. I insist that I handle this myself.
You shouldn't have to.
I want to. Don't take this from me. Jaina actually flinched. Luke didn't think he'd snapped at her. Maybe his pain was so intense that the sudden burst of it then had touched her in the force.
Okay, Uncle,
she said quietly.
But you just say the word, and I'll be there.
There was still no sign of Jason by the time Luke had tried unsuccessfully to sleep for 6 hours. He'd dropped off the charts, as Jaina put it, and Ben had not reappeared. Ben, at least, had good reason. The search for 5-Alpha resumed early in the morning. Caldabe, Mandalore. The fourth Besulik off the production line rolled out of the hangar to meet the scrutiny of a small crowd of silent, armored men. They'd folded their arms in that typical, go-on-amaze-me Mondo way, but as soon as the fighter came alive and sent dust pluming with its downdraft, they all applauded and yelled, Oya! Yes, they thought it was okay. Fett watched it with a certain pride. The higher frequencies in its drives made his sinuses tingle.
Who says defense procurement drags its feet? Said Medrit.
He didn't seem bothered by the noise, even minus his helmet. But then blacksmiths had often been deafened by their trade.
Record time.
Only another 500,000 of these, Fett said. And we'll be in business.
It's never about numbers, Mandalore. Never was.
There was something about the fighter, its effortless hover and tilt, combined with the distinct throbbing note of its propulsion, that made it exceptionally attractive. Fett doubted if it would have looked quite so pretty if it was pounding your city to molten slag. He planned to claim the offer of a test flight. Mandalore was resurgent, as Bevin liked to say, and it was gathering pace. A steady stream of Mandalorians was returning from diaspora. A few hundred thousand in a week was nothing for a trillion-body city planet like Coruscant, but Mandalore was now creaking with the influx.
You'd think a big empty planet like this could cope with a few immigrants,
Fett said.
Poor infrastructure.
Medrit craned his neck to watch another Besulik take off.
Got to fix that. 4 million was always a nice stable population, until the crab boys messed everything up.
How many incomers? Worst scenario.
Impossible to tell. But you asked for 2 million to come back. And I dare say we'll get that.
Fett still marveled at the ability of people to uproot themselves, but then Mondo Ade were traditionally nomads. And even he was happier in Slave One than with a roof over his head.
I'm always touched when people do things without my needing to hang them out of windows.
Sometimes, said Medrit. You have only to ask. Go read the Raisal Nare, the 6 basic tenets of being a Mondo. 1 is to rally to the Mandalore when called.
Handy, said Fett. But it doesn't always happen.
Fett had begun to see the recurring parallels between Mandalore the world and Mandalore the leader, and why the two terms had become synonymous in the outside world. He'd always called himself a figurehead, a reminder of what Mandalorians seemed to think they should be, social template, as well as someone to hang the blame on. But it came true. He was recovering, and so was the nation. Mandalore seemed to move inversely to the rest of the galaxy, which was busy going down the tubes and ripping itself apart yet again. But that was good for business if you sold arms and military skills, so the correlation was expected.
"Time to celebrate," Medrit said. "A little, anyway. Come on. Everyone's heading to the Tapcalf. First round's on you."
As he walked, Fett reflected that he was as close to satisfied with life as he'd been in a long time, except for the few nagging loose ends that had loomed large when he was dying and still hadn't gone away. One of them was Jason Solo. It always came down to Jedi and their schisms in the end.
"It's true, I tell you. She's been murdered."
Bevine was holding court in the Oyubat, a tapcalf that brewed a sweet, sticky Natra Gal and never ran out of narcolethi.
"Big search going on in the Hapen Cluster. Serious trouble."
Fett visited the calf once a week, partly because Myrta said it was good for morale, but mainly because Bevine asked him to. Fett wanted Bevine to succeed him, even if most expected him to groom Myrta.
"Cabinet in session, then?" he said.
The chieftains and neighbors who drank here had become Fett's cabinet, and if there was any serious attempt at government going on, Mondo Ade regarded that as a deeply unhealthy and aruatic thing, then it would only be tolerated over a Boucher Gall in the Tapcalf.
"Welcome to the Foreign Affairs Committee," said Bevine. "Mara Skywalker's missing. Presumed dead."
"How do they know she's dead if the body disappears in a puff of smoke?"
Carid muttered. He was playing a four-way board game with Medrit, Denua, and Myrta that used short-handled stabbing blades. Fett watched from the sidelines, never able to work out the rules.
"They do that, don't they?"
Fett thought of his lightsaber collection.
"Sometimes."
Carid, using his helmet on the floor as a footrest, winked.
"So where's the forensics?"
Denua stabbed her blade into the board, and there was a murmur of Gondosi.
"They sense it all in the Force."
"I joke, but I hear their son has gone missing, too."
Carid tutted loudly.
"What kind of parents are these Jedi?"
Fett wouldn't have traded places with any of the Solos or Skywalkers. They were a tragically unhappy dynasty, and even if sympathy was something nobody paid him to have, he understood the loss of a parent and a child.
"Any mention of Jason Solo?"
he asked.
"That name has cropped up."
"There's a surprise."
"Mentions of a Lumia, too. Alias Shira Bree."
Now there was a name from Fett's past. Some things never went away.
"It all ran better under Vader."
"I'm still wanting justice for my mama,"
Myrta said quietly.
"Because if nobody else can be bothered to slit Jason Solo's throat, I will."
She hadn't mentioned that in a while. Everyone, was waiting to see what retribution Fett had devised for the Solo brat. The longer he waited, the more sadistically just they expected it to be. But Fett could see something different in Myrta's eyes. If her grandfather was the most efficiently brutal bounty hunter in the galaxy, why hadn't he brought her Jason Solo's hide? The Jedi were right about one thing. Raw anger was a poor basis for action.
he'd teach her cold patience, the best legacy he could bequeath her.
"Medrit," said Fett, "I want to send Han Solo a gift.
Nice carbonite table.
Proper Beskar crush gaunts, so he can throttle the life out of his vermin spawn. And maybe a couple of armor plates and a small blade."
"Gift wrapped? Signed, please kill your son before we have to?"
"Just with deepest sympathy."
It was as deep as Fett could manage, anyway. It must have been terrible to have such a disappointment for a son. Hapes Cluster. Luke thought it was prudent for Corran Horn to take over the Jedi Council in his absence. He wasn't sure he could trust himself. It all felt very academic, even on a good day, and today was as far from one of those as he could imagine. But apart from the fact that he was now minus everything good in his heart except Ben, Luke felt like his old self for the first time in years. He felt clarity. He knew what he had to do, and there were no gray areas or ambiguities about who was right and who was wrong. For all his pain, the sense of clean focus gave him something to cling to. And old voices called to him. He cruised the transitory mists in the Stealth X, wondering if it had been a phantom effect of the region's ionization and sensor-scrambling phenomena that had guided him here. He magnified his presence in the Force again. The comm alert broke his concentration for a moment.
"Luke," said Corran's voice, "this is kind of hard to ignore. Everyone's getting anxious to saddle up and lend you a hand."
"There's only one person I need to respond, my friend, and she's coming. But thanks."
"What do you mean, she's coming?"
"Lumia. I can feel her strongly now."
"It's a trap, Luke."
"For me and her, then."
"She's making it too easy."
"Corran, don't worry about me."
"You know any one of us would gladly do it for you."
"I do. And that's why I have to." Lumia was here. Luke could feel her because she wanted him to. He knew that. He wondered how many times she'd passed by him unnoticed and undetected, and congratulated herself on her stealth. He thought of the hand offered to him after they last fought, and how he hadn't detected any ill will. That level of skilled deceit would have been impressive if he hadn't felt so sickeningly betrayed by it. Betrayed by his own gullibility. Mara used to say he bent over backward to see the good in everyone.
"I won't be trying too hard today," he whispered. "In fact, not at all."
He didn't even miss Mara right then. To miss someone, he had to accept that they were gone so he could yearn for them. Mara was still there, just frustratingly silent and unseen. And he dreaded the moment when he finally said to himself, "Yes, she's gone. She's really gone. And she isn't going to walk through the doors and complain how crowded the Skylanes are these days." The transitory mists were bandit country, rife with piracy, and Luke didn't care. He maintained a steady circuit off Terrafon. Eventually, the feeling of someone darting through his peripheral vision became one of someone in the same room. He rotated the fighter 360 degrees in each plane, ignoring his sensors and his force senses for the moment, because he wanted to see this thing coming, to look it in the eye and take in the entirety of it in the fundamental way of a grieving husband, not a Jedi Master. "I knew you'd find time for me," he calmed. Had she heard him?
His calm crackled. Lumia's voice had never aged. He hadn't noticed that before.
I saw no point in running, Luke. Let's finish this.
The ship was exactly as he'd imagined, rough-skinned, red-orange, so organic in appearance that it might have suited the Yuuzhan Vong. The angular masts and webbed vanes at its cardinal points lent it an edge of predatory grace.
I had to make sure she died, said Lumia. But you'll understand that, sooner or later.
She didn't open fire, and the sphere didn't move. Luke considered taking one kill shot, but he'd done that before, and a pilot called Shira Bree had survived the appalling injuries he inflicted to become the cyborg facing him now. No, she had to die for good. The sphere rotated to face Terrafon and began to pick up speed, on a straight course for the planet. Luke set off in pursuit, and the two ships accelerated, pushing their sublight limits in what Luke started to feel was a crash dive. Oh no, Lumia. You don't get away with a suicide run. You're mine. He stayed within his thoughts. He had next to nothing to say to her now. The sphere was streaking ahead of him, pulling away. He hung on it, closing the gap, calculating how long he had to intercept before it hit the upper atmosphere and plummeted to the surface, robbing him of every closure he needed. And justice. Don't forget that. It's about paying the price for Mara's life. The StealthX edged nearer its manual's recommended safe velocity. Luke brought the fighter alongside the sphere, dipping one set of wings in warning to make it clear he'd intercept her. Maybe she didn't realize that he had tractor capability. She would now. Luke dropped back behind her and applied enough traction to slow her and get her attention. He could have sworn something protested. It was the ship, complaining deep in his mind about the rough handling. Lumia seemed to get the idea and decelerated. Luke broke contact before they hit atmosphere and followed her down, buzzing her to force her to land on a flat-topped mesa overlooking a typically spacious Haven-style city nestling among trees and vast gardens. He jumped out of the cockpit and waited for her to leave the safety of her vessel, standing with his lightsaber in both hands. Eventually, an opening formed in the side of the sphere, and she emerged. Would the ship attack him as it had Mara? It made no move. He couldn't even feel it now.
Come on, Luke. Try to finish the job. Mara would have wanted that, yes?
Lumia reached up to her face and tore away the veil that covered everything but her eyes. Then she reached behind her back and slowly drew out her light whip.
And this isn't to make you feel shame for the extent of my injuries. I just want you to see who you're fighting.
I'm seeing. Luke drew his lightsaber, and temporary comfort flooded him. And this ends here. He knew the light whip by now. He'd relied on the Shoto as an extra weapon in the past to counter the whip's twin elements of matter and energy, but he was flooded with a new confidence that he could take her with just the lightsaber that had always stood between him and darkness. Holding it two-handed over his head, he rotated it slowly, stalking around her. Lumia raised her arm to flick the whip and get the momentum of the forward stroke, and then she cracked it, sending forks of dark energy crackling into the ground at his feet, making him jump back before he sprang forward again and brought the lightsaber around in a right-to-left arc that she parried with the whip's handle. He leapt out of range of the whirling tails again and again. Then she paused, and he edged closer again. "You hate me that much?" he asked.
"I don't hate you at all."
"You killed her. You killed my Mara."
"Nothing personal."
She looked as if she was smiling, but the movement was around her eyes rather than her cybernetic mouth.
"Just doing what I swore an oath to the Emperor to do. To serve the dark side. Oaths matter, Luke. They're all you're left with in the end."
She drew back her arm and brought the light whip crackling through the air, missing Luke by centimeters. He lunged at her again and again, driven back each time. She'd slow sooner or later. But so would he. Then, as she began to raise her arm again, he ran at her, so close in that she couldn't get the whip traveling at its maximum lethal speed. He forced her back, step by step, as she tried to maintain the distance she needed. 1, 2, 3, 4. She blocked him, handle held this way, then that, using the whip like a short lightsaber to deflect him. But Luke didn't pause or shift direction to wrong-foot her. He drove her like a battering ram toward the edge of the mesa, pushing her within meters, then a step of the edge. Lumia held the whip handle in both hands like a staff and blocked his downward sweep. For a moment they were locked in a stalemate, pushing against each other and grunting with the effort, with only the sounds of exertion, because they had nothing left to say to each other. Her rear foot began to slide backward as she struggled for purchase. The edge of the mesa was cracked and fissured. The smooth, glittering stone began to crumble. Luke reached out and caught her hand as she fell, whip tumbling and bouncing down the steep rock face into oblivion. He leaned back, all his weight on his heels, knuckles clenched white with the strain of holding her weight, and for a second he wanted to see her face dwindling as she fell to her death, mouth open in a scream. But that wasn't the way to end this. "I'd never let you fall," Luke said, and pulled her back to safety. As she straightened up, he looked her in the eyes, calm, eerily calm, and swung his lightsaber in a single decapitating arc. Now he could breathe again. Cavan, Stormwater Tunnels. Ben sat in the tunnel with his mother for a long time, and that fact in itself was the start of his investigation. At first he deluded himself that she was in a deep healing trance, even though the Force never lied, and the void that had opened in it would have been felt and understood by every Jedi. He'd run straight to her side, through country he didn't know, and found her. He wanted to think she wasn't dead because she was there, still much as he'd last seen her, except for the blood and scrapes of a new fight. So he sat with her, waiting. He wanted to clean her face and make her beautiful again, but his GAG training said not to remove evidence, not to tamper with a crime scene. Ben, the 14-year-old son, lost and grief-stricken, willed his mother just to be in a deep trance. Ben, the lieutenant, knew better, but didn't mention it to his child self, and was careful to note everything around him, take holo images, make notes of smells, sounds, and other ephemeral data, and begin to form a logical sequence that would tell him how his mother had met her death. He was still sitting there, taking in every pore of her skin and every speck of brick dust on her jacket, when he heard someone picking his way over debris toward him.
he couldn't feel the person in the force. "Hello, Jason," he said, and turned to look at him. Jason's mouth opened slightly while he stared first at Mara, a long, baffled stare, and then at Ben. He reached out his hand to him.
"It's okay, Ben. It's okay. We'll get whoever did this. I swear we will."
Ben was still shut down, hiding his force presence. But Jason had found him. It was time to go to his father. He wanted to be with him now. Maybe the killing of his mother had left a mark in the force that Jason had followed. Ben considered the possibility that he was too upset to notice it himself. He made a careful note of it anyway.